Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
When you're doing this breath, then you've got a teacher that's also helping you sort of reprogram, if you will, some of the limiting belief thoughts, the negative self-beat, the loop that we get in, that we get stuck in. Because of life, because of our trauma, because of our past, because of society often. When we quiet the mind enough that we can insert some better beliefs, some better thoughts, some better affirmations, then we can reprogram a little bit, if you will, what's going on in our conscious mind by putting them in our subconscious while the frontal lobe is quiet.
The seven chakras, swirling vortices of energy, positioned throughout our body from the base of the spine to the crown of the head. For thousands of years, this ancient wisdom has been passed on from master to disciple. What are the functions of these energy centers? And could these chakras help you unlock your destiny and find your true purpose? Welcome to My Seven Chakras, and now, your host, Aditya Jayakumar.
What's up, Action Tribe? AJ here, host and founder of My Seven Chakras, mysevenchakras.com, the place where we help you calm your mind, relax your nervous system, and experience deep states of bliss. In today's episode, we're going to go deeper once again on the topic of breathwork. I know many of you enjoy, love, and want to get deeper into breathwork. And so my goal in this series is to interview people from different streams of breathwork, different families of breathwork, and sort of see what the similarities are, or maybe what the nuances are, so that you can get to know more about this ancient practice that is practiced in modern times, right? So we're going to have an exciting episode for you today. If, for example, you aren't subscribed yet or you haven't hit follow, make sure you do that. Hit follow, hit subscribe, so that you are in the know of future episodes that we release, so that you don't miss out on anything at all. Right. And if you enjoy this episode towards the end, make sure that you give us a rating and review, because as you know, the more you share, the more we grow. With that being said, let's bring on our special guest for today, Rebecca Kordecki. She is the founder of the Breath Zone RK Fit and creator of Booty Slide, a full body slide based workout sold at Walmart and Kmart. She has enjoyed a very successful 26-year career as a highly sought after celebrity fitness trainer, health and wellness expert, corporate coach, writer, and motivational speaker. Over the past 6 years, Rebecca has also added breathwork to her list of expertise after training with Dan Brulé and David Elliott. She is passionate about teaching people to use breath and movement to get out of their heads and into their hearts, and through that, become the boss of their happy and healthy. She's been featured on The Today Show, LA Magazine, Extra, Daily Candy, and In Vogue Magazine, Men's Health, and many others. I sense that you are going to enjoy listening to this episode, so make sure that you stay till the very end, because as you know, we keep the amazing parts that I know many of you like towards the end. So don't miss out on that. With that being said, let's bring on our special guest, Rebecca Kordecki. Welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Amazing, amazing. It's great to meet you as well. Where do we begin?
At the beginning? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, at the beginning is scary, but you're the boss.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've got so many themes and stories and avenues of breathwork that I wanted to get into, especially about how you got into breathwork. But, you know, before that, I'd love to know, where were you born and brought up, and give us a glimpse into what your childhood was like.
Okay. Well, I was born in Chicago, Illinois, and I was... sort of, you know, my childhood was a little bit rocky, if I'm honest. I was in and out of foster care for up until I was about 12. So I lived in a bunch of different places as a kid, which also, you know, even though some people might hear foster care and think that that's a sad upbringing, it actually gave me a lot of the strengths I believe that I have today. It taught me, you know, a little bit about how to fend for myself. It taught me about resilience. It taught me about, you know, knowing that you really do have to count on yourself and you can't always count on others. So a lot of these things are great strengths that I use now as an adult. When I was a kid, bouncing around a lot, I never really felt like I was bouncing around, I guess. Again, the resilience came into play. And so, you know, I always thought I had a happy life until I look back on it. I'm like, that wasn't really that happy. That was a little messed up. But, and then when I was 12, I got adopted, and the man who adopted me lived in Wisconsin. And so I was raised from 12 to 16 on an 80-acre farm. So we had chickens and cows and horses and you name it, we had it. And I was a farm girl, I guess, for a few years. And then I, at 16, wanted to go live with my mom. My parents were separated. And so I went to live with my mom in California. That is how I ended up in sunny California. And I fell in love. I found the ocean. I found warm weather. I was so happy to get out of Wisconsin and Chicago. And so thus began my, you know, early years in my 20s, and spent that time in LA. I, you know, unfortunately, I sort of fell into the wrong crowd when I got to LA. I didn't really have a lot of structure. My mom kind of gave me a lot of freedom, which I guess could be good and bad. And I moved out on my own when I was 16 and a half, almost 17. And so I finished high school living alone and fell into a wrong crowd, even though I still graduated from high school, but I fell into the wrong crowd and got into a drug addiction, which almost literally took my life. For 6 years, I was heavily addicted to a drug. And finally, at 26, I decided that it was time to change my life. And I realized that if I didn't change it in that moment, that I would die. And so I made a decision. It was one night, it was 4 a.m. I remember I was walking down the street in Los Angeles and I was barefoot, bloody. I had a bloody nose and I was literally broke. And I, in that moment, decided this is my bottom. This is as low as I can go. And I decided I want to live and live a really healthy, awesome life. And so that began my journey into the healing work that I now do. The transformation that I made in my life was through fitness and running, and then I became a trainer. There's a whole lot more to it, but that was really the beginning of me turning my whole life around.
Well, thank you for sharing, firstly. I've always been curious, and I've never had the opportunity to ask somebody, what was it like to be adopted when you were 12 years old? What was that experience like? What does a person go through? I'm sure it's a very subjective experience and each child has a different experience. But for yourself, what was it like?
You know, it's interesting because the man who adopted me, he was in my life already. He had been someone my mom had married for 2 years while I was young. And they stayed friends and he stayed in my life. So I already sort of knew him and knew his wife, who became my stepmom. And so there was a little bit of familiarity. So it wasn't as if I had just completely from a cold start in a foster home been adopted, which I imagine brings a whole host of other feelings and emotions. But since I had a familiarity with him, it actually felt really wonderful. I was really happy and excited to go live with this quote unquote new family. The problem was for me is that once I got there, I felt very, I felt like an outsider. And I did that to myself. It wasn't anything they did to me. Everyone was very loving and kind and welcoming, like the extended family. But I personally felt like I was an outsider. I never felt like I belonged. So as much as I was happy in the beginning, as I lived there for over the 4 years, I felt myself withdrawing more and more and more and feeling like they were just doing me a favor. They were trying to just save me. And I was this wounded child. And that was, again, all things that I did in my own mind. No one did that to me. They didn't make me feel that way. And I think that comes from, you know, a feeling of the truth of all of that, like being in foster care and then being adopted, is you feel abandoned and you feel wounded. And so I think that was the side effect of it.
And then at a certain point, like you mentioned, you moved to LA, right? So what switched, what changed for you there? And also talk a little bit about the role that your mother played in your life at that point, because you said that you had freedom, but you lacked some structure as well. So give us a glimpse into that, because I think that is an important phase as well. Right?
Yeah, thank you for that. It was. You know, my mom was a free spirit. She was, you know, kind of like a hippie, you know, free, amazing artist, talented, beautiful. I looked up to her. I idolized her. But by no fault of her own, she had some illnesses. And so, and back then we didn't always know what these things were called, but now I've learned over the years that that was bulimia, anorexia, and some other things that she struggled with. So she was constantly in and out of hospitals when I was a kid, which is how we ended up in foster care. The state determined that she wasn't fit to take care of us. So even when I moved to go live with her at 16, and I got there and I realized there was some other things, issues with her and behaviors and things that I recognized that, you know, which is partially why she didn't give a lot of structure, because she was a very free spirit. But I realized that I did need structure and she wasn't giving it. And, you know, there were some struggles with addiction on her part, I believe, with drinking and things. And so there were times when, you know, things were out of control and I just didn't feel like it was a good environment for myself. And I just made a decision to go get an apartment. So I found a roommate in the paper and I moved out and I got two jobs and I put myself in school and I worked. And, you know, I don't know how I knew that as a 16-year-old that this isn't healthy where I'm at. But I, like I said, I do believe that, like, intrinsically, I always say that I believe we're more a winning spirit than a losing spirit. I believe we're more resilient than we are want to throw in the towel. So I think that that was just in me. And I knew that to thrive, I needed to leave her. And so I did. And so when I moved out, for the first year or two, it was good. And then, like I said, I did fall into the wrong crowd again, without structure and, you know, making poor choices. But yeah, so that's what that was like.
It just speaks to the importance also of, you know, your community or surrounding yourself with the right individuals, right? You, an individual, would you say, might have a lot of intention and determination and wanting to do a certain things. But for example, if you're in the wrong crowds, for no fault of yours, you know, things might not go as intended. So I'm curious, when you were a child, did you have any spiritual experiences or mystical experiences?
Oh, wow. You know, I, well, yeah, because I was raised, when I finally landed in the adopted family's home, Catholic. And so, you know, we were, and one of the foster families that we lived with was Church of Christ. So they were very religious and very strict. And then when I lived with the man I call my dad, who adopted me, very Catholic, very religious with the Catholic faith. And so my mom was the opposite. She wasn't religious at all. I wouldn't even say she was spiritual. So I never had any experience of spirituality or things that happened to me on my own that I experienced. And then when I had this experience with the very religious foster family and then being, you know, sort of forced into the, you know, Catholicism, I sort of rebelled against religion. And it wasn't until I was in my late 20s, early 30s that I started to discover spirituality on my own through meditation and through wanting to connect deeper with myself and understand things that I'd been through. And that's when I discovered spirituality. And I think it was from just a searching and a needing to really understand deeper who I was, why I was here. I remember I used to ask the question. I would wake up in the morning and I would just say, you know, is this all there is? Is this all that, is this what I'm meant to be? Am I just here to take up space on the planet? That doesn't make any sense to me. I feel like I'm here for more. And so I would always question, why am I here? Why am I here? And I dealt with depression for a lot of years because I never knew, quote unquote, my why or my purpose or my mission until probably my early 30s. And then I stumbled into it.
Yeah. I feel sometimes that ignorance can be a bliss, right?
Yes.
Like if you don't know a lot of things, life is simple. You just you know, work a job, work on getting a promotion, you know, you get married, you follow the things, you get a house, you get a car, and then you just follow a regimented pattern and nothing is wrong with that. But when you start asking the very profound questions of yourself, irrespective of whether you know the answers or not, like for me, the three most fundamental questions is where you're from, what is your purpose, and most importantly, what's going to happen after you pass away.
Legacy,
And some, right? Sometimes that can be hard because that it feels almost as if you jump into the ocean without knowing how to swim. Would you say it like that? And that can cause depression also, right? Because you're like, wow, I didn't know that this expression of my life exists. So much is possible. And yet here I am.
Yeah. So I'm grateful for those profound questions, honestly, because it would have been, you know, I don't believe in wasting a life, right? And the years that I was using drugs, for me, when I look back, as much as it taught me a lot and I learned some of my biggest lessons and developed a lot of qualities in me now because of that, when I look back on it, though, I do feel a bit regretful of the wasting of years that I did while I was using, because I wasn't contributing anything to the planet. I contributed nothing, you know, and I do have some regret for that, because it's 6 years of my life, 7 years of my life that I could have, who knows what I could have done in those 7 years, right?
So
it's important. I think it's really important to, you know, and each to their own, right? If you're not someone who wants to be profound and ask deep questions, then that's fine. And I don't have any judgment on that. But I do believe that if we get this one magical, perfect opportunity at a life, why would we ever squander it? You know, and the TED Talk, I don't know if you've ever seen the one by Mel Robbins, where she talks about the fact that we're ever born is like one in, I think it's 400 trillion, the odds that we're born. And so that cliche saying of like, your life is a gift, it really is. It's a miracle that we're here, that your parents met, that's the sperm and the egg connected, that it was the perfect night, the perfect timing, that you came to full term. So it is a gift, right? And so I just don't believe in squandering this life.
So. Yeah. That's way true. And, you know, when you said, I wish I had those 6 years back and I did something different, what came to my mind was that's actually good in a way, because it shows to people, somebody who might be listening to this episode, who is at year, maybe they're 35 or maybe they're 45 or maybe they're 55 as well. It just shows that it's never too late to change your life for one reason or the other. You might have gone down the wrong route, or maybe a different career that you don't really want to do, or maybe you've, you know, lost some years for some reason or the other. Maybe you're a refugee. Maybe there was an attack in your hometown and you had to change your country but you can always start from scratch because of the resilience and the amazing aspect of the human being, right? Of what is possible for us.
I love that. And I always, it's funny, I was on a hike this morning and I was just thinking how there's only two things that we can actually, that we have any control over in our life. The first is our thoughts. And the second actually is our breath. Those are the only two things we can control. We can't control other people. Right. We can't control the environment. We can't control the economy. We can't control how someone feels about us. We can't control who we're going to meet, right? The only thing we can control is what we do up here and what we do here. Our nose through our breath and our mind for our thoughts. And so, you know, in every single moment, every second, we have the opportunity to change through breath and through a thought. And so, just to your point, like it's possible to change at any moment, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, do you want to, right? That's the question.
Yeah. So what did you want to become as a child? You know, I know a lot of us had our own, you know, visions of what we wanted to become, irrespective of status. Mm-hmm. Like some people will want to do something simple, like a carpenter as well, or somebody like in my case, I wanted to be a paleontologist because I loved, you know, dinosaurs, you know, growing up. Mm-hmm. But what was it for you?
So for me, I wanted two things. One, I wanted to be a rock and roll singer. And two, I wanted to be an oceanographer. They're completely different, but And I loved, at that time, I don't know where I got the love of the ocean, because until I was 16, I never really saw the ocean when I moved to California. But for some reason, the idea of an oceanographer swimming under and like discovering things was fascinating. And then being a rock and roll singer, well, that's just cool. So, you know.
That's true.
So.
That's true. Well, the ocean is captivating and scary at the same time. It's beautiful because it's so vast, it's so expansive, and we've just discovered 5 to 7% of, you know, the oceans like Pacific and Atlantic. But at the same time, it's scary because it's so deep, and because of movies like Jaws, every time I swim, at least during a certain phase in my life, I always thought something is going to come down. You know, come up and grab me and pull.
That's funny.
Even if I was in a swimming pool.
That's funny.
But interesting. So a rock star as well. Did you say that?
A rock star, singer, rock star. Yeah. Funny though, for the ocean, because now as an older person, the ocean is my happy place. It's my safe, happy place. I didn't become an oceanographer, but it is the one place that to this day grounds me the most. So if I said, you know, if someone says, where's your happy place? I'd say near water, the ocean. Right.
That's cool. One of the things on my bucket list is to go on an ocean adventure in Haida Gwaii, which is off the coast of sort of northern British Columbia, because it's very beautiful. There's a lot of experiences that you can have in that area, and then coming back and camping on the back on the ground is something that I really crave to do.
That sounds amazing. I'm actually a big fan of camping, so maybe we should do that one together. That sounds amazing.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
That's funny.
For sure. So how did you get into fitness then? I know you sort of implied it a little bit, but what was that shift for you of getting into fitness and training and movement?
Yeah. So gosh, how did I get into fitness? Oh my goodness. It was magical, I guess, and meant to be. Through my addiction to the drugs, and then when I got clean from the drugs, I was still searching for a way to get that, I guess, high that I felt from the drug, right? So obviously I have an addictive personality. And so I started running, I think, as a form of therapy, as a way to sort of think my thoughts and feel myself. And I don't really know how I started, but when I started, I realized that every single time I ran, I felt better. I felt more connected to myself. I was able to answer questions that were percolating in my heart and mind. And so obviously back then I didn't really understand that it was endorphins being released, which was giving me this really awesome feeling every time I ran. Now I understand it and know obviously over the years. But so I fell in love with running and I started doing distance running. And then one thing led to another and I decided I wanted to do a marathon. And so before I knew it, I was running 10 miles a day, 12 miles a day. And preparing to do my first marathon, which was in Los Angeles. And so I was living in Wisconsin at the time after I got out of the rehab, and planned to come back to LA in March of the year, because the marathons were every March. And so I don't remember what month I started training, but my goal was to move back to LA after being in Wisconsin for about a year and a half after getting sober, and to come home. Usually after you do get clean off of a drug and you're sober, it's recommended that you don't make big changes or big moves. And so I stayed in Wisconsin once I got out of the rehab to really kind of solidify my foundation of sobriety. And so as I was running and training and set my goal for that marathon, I started feeling like, oh, I want to do whatever I can to get a really good time. So I started lifting weights. And because I knew that that would improve my strength and my legs and my core. And so I started lifting. And lo and behold, I fell in love with that too. So then I came back to LA. I ran that marathon. I crushed it. It was amazing. It was so fun. And I was so happy. And I got a job working at a company that was in the entertainment industry. And that was real fun and it was great. And I started like working again, which I had never held a job, a real job, like because of my years of using, I dabbled in jobs. So I had my very first job. And then from that job, I ended up in another job where I was in sales. And one day we all walked in to our jobs and we got what's called pink slipped, which means you get let go basically because the company was going under. And I'd been there for 3.5 years. And while I was there, one thing that I started sharing with people was my routine. What I was doing is everyone was like, oh my God, your body looks amazing. What are you doing? And they would see me eating my cut up fruit and my veggies for lunch and my little Tupperware dishes. And they would make fun of me because they were all going to get like, you know, some fast food down the street. And I was eating in the kitchen healthy foods. And so everyone was always asking me, like, what are you doing? How are you getting so fit? And you look great and you eat great. Tell us. So I was coaching my coworkers for free, obviously, but just giving them little tips and things. And so when we got the pink slips that day, I was like, what is the thing that excites me the most right now? Because I never want to work for a company again that can pull the rug out from under me. And so I made a decision in that moment that I wanted to work for myself, but I was like, what do I want to do? And the only thing that I felt passionate about was helping people be healthier, like I had become. And so also, I wanted to pass on the gift of how health and fitness had really saved my life, like literally saved my life. I don't know if I would have stayed clean if I hadn't discovered running. I might have fallen back into the trap of the drugs, because it was the one thing that gave me the feeling of I'm alive, I matter, things make sense. And so I felt amazing. And so I wanted to share it. And so when I got that pink slip, the next couple of weeks, I took a couple of weeks off, but I had this chunk of money because we got severance packages and a lot of time. And I'm like, what do I want to do? I think I'll be a personal trainer. So I got certified and got all my certifications and started doing that. And then I had a massage therapy along the way because I just loved the body and the anatomy. And one thing led to another. And I just started getting one celebrity client after another through, I worked at Gold's Gym in Venice, California, which is like the mecca of bodybuilding. And that's where a lot of the celebrities still train. But back then there were so many, like Sylvester Stallone, Arnold Schwarzenegger, The Rock, Oliver Stone was a client that I met in the gym. Like there was just so many celebrities. And so, little by little, I started building a beautiful career and one thing led to another, like I said. And I love the career I've had. It's been amazing.
Amazing. Amazing. So how did you go about from being addicted to maybe a drug that is not good for you in the long term to being addicted to something like running maybe or fitness that gives you a high, but it's good for you in the long run? How did your body adjust to it? Because I'm guessing that a lot of our listeners as well, somebody I know very close to me also, is trying to get off something like, for example, medications in consultation with their doctor, of course. But then sometimes it's hard to make that switch, right, into something that is good for you, like running or breath work or fitness, right? That brings about the joy within you. And deep down, at the cellular level as well, you know that it is good for you, and it shows, it radiates through your essence.
Such a good question, you know, and it also kind of in tandem with the question, like, how do you stay motivated, right? Like, so your question plus the other question that kind of comes up a lot and bubbles a lot around that same idea is, how do you stay motivated to do those healthy things, those things that are good for you? And I think this answer kind of speaks to both of those ideas of how do you find the thing and substitute it for the bad habit and create a good habit and stick to it? And how do you keep the motivation to do that good habit thing, right? And again, this was on the hikes. I don't know why I got thoughtful today, maybe because I knew that I was going to have this podcast with you. And I was thinking of a lot of like deep thoughts, but I was thinking like, what is the answer I always give people when they say, and it's like, I think it stems from having a deep enough why, and the why talk from Simon Sinek, we all know, like, what's your why? We all know this cliche saying, what's your purpose? What's your why? But in reality, it does come down to having a strong enough, or as Tony Robbins says, a compelling why, like a why that would get your booty out of bed in the morning when it's five below, when it's pouring rain, when the alarm is going off at 5 a.m. and you just want to stay warm and cozy. What is a strong enough why that will make you leap out of bed and get your butt to the gym and do the workout, run on the street, do what you've got to do to be the healthiest version of you that you also know, by the way, once you start doing it, you feel better. And once you've done it, you feel amazing. So what's stronger than just a why, like I want to look good or I want to fit into my skinny jeans? That's not strong enough. It has to be stronger than you. I think it even has to be stronger than just a looks or aesthetic. It has to be deep and strong so that it's not just about you. It's about what do you want to leave behind? What do you want to who do you want to touch on the planet? Because honestly, when we feel better about who we are and how we look and we have more confidence because now we've lost the weight, then aren't we a better human? Don't we interact with our family better? Don't we show up at work differently? Don't we create things better? So yes, it could start as a aesthetic. Yeah, I want to look better. But ultimately, when you look better because you lost the weight or you're feeling fit, you have more confidence. You become kinder for some reason. As soon as you feel more confident, you're a better human. And so all of those things tie together. So I would say build that why really strong. It's got to be so strong. And it can't just be about losing 5 pounds. It's got to be deeper than that.
And how do you keep remembering that why? Yeah. Do you have a process of, you know, waking up and maybe reading your why or putting, you know, stickers on.
I was just going to say.
Parts in your house, right? Just how to remind yourself of your why. Because otherwise, you know, you're depending on that two conferences that you attend during the year and your annual
planning. Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So, great question. And so that's the kicker, right? Like you've got to do things to reinforce it all the time. And so many years ago, before I really kind of just got really clear about how to keep my thoughts and my mindset on point, I would use sticky notes. I would write in lipstick on my mirror, like the thought for the day, the mantra that would keep me motivated. I'd put it on my refrigerator. I'd put it as a screensaver on my phone, on my computer. Whatever the motivating thought, the compelling why, the mantra, one mantra that I used to say was, I can, I will, I am. And that mantra I started when I started running at like 26, 27. When I moved to LA, I remember saying it out loud while I was running in the sand in Venice Beach, barefoot. And I would be like, I can, I will, I am. I can, I will, I am. And I would just say it the whole time I was running. And so now, even as, you know, 30 years later, I will find myself recanting that mantra when I feel lost or I'm struggling or I'm like a little lazy or I'm feeling like, I lost my mojo today. I'll just chant that particular mantra. I can, I will, I am. And I repeat it out loud. I repeat it in my head. I write it. But it starts with, you know, having it somewhere where you can see it, remember it, be faced with it. And also, at some point, it has to just be something that you catch yourself, because invariably we're going to fall off. And when you catch yourself starting to slump, like from when you're like this and you're standing tall and you're feeling good and everything is awesome, to when then invariably you're slumped over, your head goes down, your voice goes slower and quieter because you're feeling depressed or lethargic. How do you pump yourself back up? You have to have things in place. And so one of them is out loud incantations or mantras or affirmations, moving your body, changing your physiology, changing your state, to me is the favorite way. Like when I change my state through movement, instantly I feel better. Instantly. Like even if it's just like punches, doing some punches and using your breath, doing some jumping jacks, doing tapping, like tapping your body and saying some things out loud. But you've got to do something that changes your state and jars you from going down into that rabbit hole of, you know, yeah, life sucks, right? You just got to pull yourself out and you have to have things in place.
True. How did you discover breath work? When did that happen? What was going on in your life? And, you know, what was that experience like?
Yeah, for me, well, I had done meditation since I'm 30. So I had meditated on and off since 30, but I never, you know, focused just solely on the breath like I did about 8 years ago when I discovered breath work. Meditation I found was amazing, but I did struggle with quieting the monkey mind, right? Like, which is a lot of people's reason for not being able to meditate. And so about, like I said, 8 years ago, I was in a breakup. And over the years, over the 20, 30 years of being in this business of, you know, helping people transform their bodies and wanting to help people, you know, have alignment in mind, body, and soul. And I was saying the whole thing about, you know, it's not just one thing. It's not just body. It's not just soul. It's not just mind. It's all of these things as one, a unified, holistic approach. And I was talking about that 20 years ago in Gold's Gym, and people were looking at me like I had four heads, like I was a weirdo. Yeah. But I was saying it's mind, body, soul, mind, body, spirit. And so now that's finally cool to talk about. But when I had many tools. Like I have used anger work. I've used journaling. I've used, you know, getting lost in the wilderness to find myself. I've used all these things to help me when I'm in a tough place, right? But this one particular breakup that I was going through 8 years ago, for some reason, none of my tools were working. Anger work didn't work. Meditation wasn't working. Journaling wasn't working. I was feeling really stuck and paralyzed. And so a friend of mine said, hey, go try breath work. There's this new studio that opened and go try it. I'm like, what's that? I didn't even know that there was a thing called breath work. And so I went and I went to this class, and it was the 3-part open mouth breathing. And my whole world just blew open. Everything, like I was crying. I was letting go of anger. I was letting go of tears. I was in gratitude. I remember sitting up from that class and just going, oh my goodness, this is the thing. This is the thing that can change a life, not only for me, myself. And in that moment, I knew what to do in the relationship and how to move through it with grace and kindness and all of that. But most importantly, I was feeling a little stuck in my business. Like I wanted to go deeper with clients, but I didn't have a tool. And so I was already starting the wheel turning of like, what's the next iteration of my work? And so that night I was like, not only do I need this for me, but I want to do this with other people. And I knew I wanted to teach it. And so that was the beginning of me starting to study it. And I went deeper for my own work. And then I started taking different training certifications, and thus began my journey.
Got it. So you focus on conscious circular breathing, right? At least that's one of the styles.
Yeah. And that is, it's called 3-part open mouth breathing or conscious circular breathing. It's been called transformational breathing, holotropic breath, you know, all the different styles, right? The iterations of it.
Yeah. So for somebody who's new to this, could you paint a picture of what this involves?
This particular type of breath too, like I also coach and believe in gentle, just pranayama, just basic breath, right? Just, you know, deep inhale, open the mouth, audible sigh, exhaling. Those types of breaths, and even in through the nose, out through the nose, are beautiful and healing and soothing and calming. And I love that. And I also teach that style. But my favorite style to teach, like you just described, is the conscious circular breath. And the reason why is because To me, it is the fastest way to shift your state. And to me, I also believe it's literally a direct hit to your heart. Whereas sometimes the other breathing, it's beautiful, it's grounding, like for meditative style breathing, but it doesn't what I call crack you open like conscious circular breath work does. And that is why I was drawn to it, because I've always been this person that wanted to help people shift where they were at, let go of their trauma, heal their past, not let limiting beliefs and abuses and things like that steal their joy in their life. And the tools that I believe we have, like, no disrespect, I believe in talk therapy. I was in and out of therapy as a kid and in my 20s and 30s for years, but I never had this huge life-changing shift in therapy ever. And so, and same with journaling and meditation. And so this breath work to me is the most cathartic. And so it's a three-part breath that is all done through the open mouth. And we do it through the open mouth so that we can bring in a lot of oxygen, which is healing and has wisdom and has insight and energy. And then we exhale, we do two inhales, one to the belly, one into the heart. And then the exhale is also out the mouth. So we're pulling in all this oxygen, and then we're setting free all the carbon dioxide on the exhale. And the exchange of these two gases creates this beautiful melting pot of an area for you to kind of shift. And I don't know, there is no real rhyme or reason of why we pull the breath into our belly, and except for that is where we store a lot of emotions. I guess that makes the most sense. And then the energy from breath stirs it all up. And then that exhale allows you to free it, right? I mean, but there's no scientific proof that that's why people cry profusely or have this big aha, or even say they feel like they took ayahuasca. I've had people say that it feels like I'm on ayahuasca when I do this kind of breath work. So that's kind of a little bit about what it, how you do it and what it's like. I do think, to me, it's the, out of 28 years in the healing wellness space, this is the modality that shifts people the quickest that I've ever seen. The healthiest version. I mean, obviously you could take a drug and get high and be shifted, but that's not a healthy way to do it. So.
And so you've said that breathwork is like a direct hit to your heart. So tell me a little bit more about this.
Yeah. Well, I, you know, like I said, for me, the first breathwork I did, it brought a big fetal position cry, a big guttural cry. It brought gratitude and it brought forgiveness and it brought healing through the process of the breath. And obviously I had a great teacher and, you know, that was leading the class. But I think even without a teacher, a great teacher or a teacher, I do it to myself. I take myself in my, I have a walk-in closet that I turned into my breathing space and my also my sound room. And I take myself in there and I put on a playlist and I do the breath. And first note of the first song, I'm crying and I'm reconnected to my heart again. So when I say it's a direct hit to your heart, it really is. It literally, it's as if, you know, sometimes we're numb or we're distracted or we're walking around. We're just like in our head. We're not feeling life. We're doing life, right? Breath work, this type of breath work makes you feel life. It makes you connect to life. And that's, you know, so when I say direct hit to the heart, it's like, it's literally like a fire hose of connection to your heart. Yeah.
It's very, very true. And I found also a lot of times we get used to a pattern so much that we're literally, you know, just in and out doing what we think we should and going by what societal standards are of what we should be doing. And we forget what our true aspirations are, what our true goals are, what's our vision really that we probably might have set years back. And also breathwork helps you remember that, right? And it also helps you remember that, but helps you discover that you might be closer than you think you were to that goal, right? To that ideal.
So true. I mean, there's so many gifts of breathwork. It's clarity, it's connection, it's gratitude, it's forgiveness, it's kindness, it's purpose, it's calm. I mean, there's just, the list is endless, you know?
Right. How does breathwork help a person let go of limiting beliefs? Because a lot of times we have these limiting beliefs that prevent us from taking action or prevent us from actually, you know, thinking that it's possible for us in the first place and owning it and expecting that result, which is so crucial, right, in terms of goal setting. So how does breathwork help us let go of those limiting beliefs, not just for the 1, 2, 3 hours after the breathwork session, but for a more longer term?
Yeah, great question. Well, what's beautiful about this type of breathwork and this style is we're all familiar with flow state, right? Like when you get into flow state, that's like the perfect sweet spot of life, right? And so we want to be in flow state as often as we can. And it's hard to get there because of our monkey mind and our thoughts and our limiting beliefs. But when we do this conscious circular breath pattern, what it does is it taps into our frontal lobe and it turns off. There's a thing called transient hyperfrontality. It's a weird word, but what it does is it allows for a moment in time the frontal lobe to quiet. It quiets down for a moment, for just a moment in time, the mind and the thinking mind, the conscious mind. And so when you're doing this breath and you've got a teacher that's also helping you sort of reprogram, if you will, some of the limiting belief thoughts, the negative self-beat, the loop that we get in, that we get stuck in because of life, because of our trauma, because of our past, because of society often. When we quiet the mind enough that we can insert some better beliefs, some better thoughts, some better affirmations, then we can reprogram a little bit, if you will, what's going on in our conscious mind by putting them in our subconscious while the frontal lobe is quiet. Our thinking mind quiets down long enough for us to do that. And if you do that enough, repeatedly, continuously, like create a habit of it, eventually you shift that groove in the record that was negative, that groove in the record that was self-beating, that was limiting, and you reprogram it with positive things and beautiful things and uplifting thoughts. So that's kind of how it does it.
That's very, very true. I don't know who said that, but somebody said, we are creatures of habit. And so we are what we do most of the time. So, right. The more you do something, then automatically, whether it's good or bad, we become that. And that becomes an expression of us. What was, I mean, if you're open to sharing, what was the biggest fear that you had to work on? Or limiting belief on your journey?
Oh, geez. That's an easy one for me. You know, we grew up, when I did live with my mom in and out of the foster care, we grew up on welfare. And so we had food stamps and we lived in what's called a HUD house, which means the government subsidized the home. And so we grew up poor. And, you know, I remember being in lines at the grocery store and my mom would pull out the food stamps and, you know, the people and just, we would get looks and it was embarrassing. I remember being shamed about money, about being poor, but then also some of the beliefs and mindset that my mom did have around money. She would say things like most parents, a lot, it's not uncommon. Money doesn't grow on trees. Like that's not that uncommon, but she would also say things like, you know, people with money are snobs or jerks or assholes, you know, like she would say these things about having money was bad. And that if you have money, you're going to be a jerk in life. And so I grew up with a poverty mindset that I didn't deserve to have abundance, that I didn't deserve to be wealthy. And that if I had money, I was going to be a jerk. And so one of the things that I had to overcome and work really hard on was my belief that I deserved to have money and that it's okay to have money and I can be a good human and be rich too. So I'm still working on it. It's something I work on all the time because it's not always easy to reprogram something you grew up with that's ingrained in your cells. But, you know, we've got great tools now. We're talking about one of them, the breath work. And, you know, there's even... you know, plant medicines that people can use to shift some of their beliefs and limiting beliefs from, you know, years and years of living in a certain way. And you can go on a journey and suddenly, you know, you can reprogram it. And so, I worked a lot on that one. you know, and there's always other, you know, as I'm older, right, like the aging, you know, fear of like, is it too late? You know, have I, but then I always just proved myself that it is never too late, because look at all that I've done every time I reinvent myself and my business, like going into breath work mm-hmm. from fitness, you know, that was a reinvention basically. And it was scary, that transition. I really kind of dove all in into the breath work, and I had to let go of my other business. And it was scary in the beginning, right? And then, mm-hmm. But I had success pretty quickly. I got, I wouldn't call it luck. I believe, what is it? What's it? When preparedness meets opportunity, right? So I wouldn't call it luck, but I did the work, and I showed up fully as myself every single time I taught, and I developed a following pretty quickly. But So the fear of getting older and the fear of money were two of my things I had to work on.
What is your understanding of money? What is money to you?
Well, back in the day, it had one understanding, but now what I believe money is just simply an exchange of energy that allows us to have what I believe freedom, to have choices, to have opportunities, to give back, to be able to expand how we do what we do, touch more people. Like, that's how I look at money now. I've never cared about materialism. I don't care about fancy cars or jewelry. Say I wear no jewelry. Don't even wear earrings. I mean, I don't believe it. I don't care about any of that. And it's fine for those that do. But the reason why I crave and care about having money is so that I can do more beautiful things in the world, so that I have freedom to work on projects that are my passion projects, to be able to give more back to the universe and leave a legacy behind. Money to me is freedom. Money is opportunity and options.
Mm-hmm. Very true, very true. And sometimes I think about money as being a custodian of money, in that it's not really yours, but you are somebody who knows how to use this energy so that you are dispersing it and using it in the best way and the highest use possible. So like you pointed out, you're not just hoarding it yourself, but then it's coming into your life and then you're using it, channeling it, giving it back, so that that cycle is met.
Right.
And it's very, very interesting. I love to ask this question from time to time, because, you know, everyone has our own money story and our relationship to what we define as money, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, in talking about trauma, I know we went a little bit into this, and we all have different types of trauma. Yeah. We are born with a trauma. Birthing, in a way, is a trauma as well. And, you know, different types of trauma, PTSD. Mm-hmm. You know, relationship trauma, breakups, things like that. But how does breathwork help us process and deal with and maybe resolve that trauma?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, look, and I, you know, disclaimer, I'm obviously not a licensed therapist or trauma therapist. So I want to just clarify that right out the gate. But obviously, I have experienced my own trauma, and I've also worked with students and clients who have trauma and have come to me and have expressed their traumas. So I have witnessed through my own eyes and experientially the way that breath work has been able to help people understand their trauma, move through it, and let it go. I've seen it with my own eyes. I've experienced it, like I said. So when we talk about how does breath work help people, you know, just being careful to not be, you know, making claims here, but I have literally process some of my own trauma, which was, you know, abandonment trauma, sexual abuse trauma, just fear in general over, you know, what am I going to do with my life traumas. And I've processed through a lot of mine through my own breath work. And I've seen the people that I've worked with let go of a lot of their quote unquote traumas, little T's, big T's, trauma, PTSD, all the types of trauma that there is. And it's because, again, you know, it starts with understanding the trauma, the effect it's had in your life, how it's impacted you. It's never the trauma itself. It's what the trauma leaves behind, the scarring of the trauma. And so how can we deal with the scars that are left and what they're doing, what our perception of those scars are, what is our relationship with what it's done to us. That's what we need to work on. And so I believe that a lot of times breath work really just helps us fall back in love with who we are, forgive ourselves and others. It helps us let go of shame. It helps us understand sometimes that everything we go through is not to us. It didn't happen to us. As they say, it happened for us. And so if we can turn the way we look at the trauma around, that is the beginning of letting it go and moving through it and healing it. And so breath work is just a conduit to helping you understand it, to helping you have clarity, to helping you get forgiveness and freedom. You know, so I can't say that it heals it fully. You may still need to do more work, but it certainly opens the doorway to freeing yourself from it and unlocking that bondage that it has on us.
That's very true. If all of us were able to see, you know, like a deep level of energy, then we would see all these different cords and strings that are connected to each other at an etheric level or a quantum level. Because I think every interaction that we have, every glass that we have with another person is like a cord that's getting, you know, connected, right? And obviously, the deeper relationship you have, the stronger that knot is. And so it's fascinating how sometimes we need to cut the cord. Sometimes we need to strengthen the cord. Right. But it's interesting.
Well, it's all connected, right? Everything affects, because we're all energy, right? And we're all frequency, vibration, and everything we do impacts the world. It impacts energy. It impacts others around us. So we don't live in an island. We don't live in a vacuum, you know,
Now, when it comes to somebody wanting to, you know, envision something or change their life or create something brand new, a lot of times they say that it's not about what you do, but it's about who you become that will allow you to sort of step into that new role, right? They say that identity is more important than, you know, learning to do X, Y, Z, the steps. Right. So how, from your perspective, does a person go about identity shifting in that sense so that they can, you know, be that person that does this or facilitates this or owns this? Right. Because it almost feels as if it's a never ending road. You may learn like hundreds of skills, but deep down, if you don't feel that you're
worthy, that deserve other it or
person, right? It's never going to happen. But let's say, for example, you don't have all those skills, but deep down you feel like, you know, you've stepped into that identity. You've had that identity shift. Would you say it becomes a little bit more streamlined or flow, so to speak?
100%. I think, you know, gosh, one of the saddest things for me to have witnessed over, you know, by now, I think I've seen like 11,200 students, something like that, over 11,000 students. I don't know the exact number, but over the 8 years in different classes and workshops and trainings I've done over the years. And one of the most common threads of identities that people have is that they don't feel worthy or deserving. I'd say that is the most common theme that I've seen in people. And it this one breaks my heart the most, because that is what leads to people feeling, unfortunately, suicide ideation, and people not wanting to be here anymore, right? So that one has broken my heart the most. And I think, how do we change this identity? How do we change this mindset? I mean, again, it's like, first you have to, with anything, the only way to change anything is first to understand it. Understand, identify what it is that you identify with. Like, what are you believing about yourself? Are you believing that you're an unworthy person? Do you believe that you are too old? Do you believe that you're not sexy enough? So first identify what are your limiting identity beliefs, right? Understand those, look at those, so that you can see what you need. What's the juxtaposition? What's the opposite of that? How do you need to flip it to become the person that you want to be, right? And so if you have no clarity around it, it's really hard to change your identity. But once we get really crystal clear about what we think we are, and we understand that that's not really serving us, then we can go about going, okay, I think I'm too old. Well, is that true? Is that real? Am I really too old? Like, then I'll go and find some cases of people that are twice my age, or, well, not twice my age, they wouldn't be alive, but like way older than I am, and see that they've done it before. They've created what I want to create. Find an example of it, and then I can flip that belief. I'm not too old. That's just a thought I've been telling myself about who I am, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not deserving, I'm not worthy. Well, who told you that? Where did you get that belief? Is that true? Is that real? Like, first question it. Understand that that's some story. Where did you first hear that story? Who told you that?
Right.
And then question that source. Somebody in your life told you that. Who is that person? Are they worthy of telling you that? Are they worthy, right? And then once we identify what we don't want to be, the identity that isn't serving us anymore, we, like I said, we go about flipping it. And you can only flip it by, you have to disprove those beliefs. And then you set the new ones in place. And then you have to, they have to become you. You have to own them. You have to really let them meld into your body, right? And then you have to step into that fully. But again, if you don't believe it, if you don't believe you're worthy or deserving of it, no matter what, how much work you try to do on identity shifting, it won't take. It won't stick. So I believe it's a constant. Like, that was that little magnet you put on your refrigerator. I'm a work in progress. I used to have that magnet that says I'm a constant work in progress, and we all are.
Yeah, that's very true. You come across a lot of people who are in their mid-30s and they've already given up on life. They're like, you know, my 20s were great and that was a time to really do stuff, but now. And on the other hand, you have people who are in their mid-40s, mid-50s, or even mid-60s who have a different mindset. They go to the gym like 3 to 4 times in a week. Maybe they go for fitness. They go, you know, to do sauna. They do a cold plunge. They do breath work. And they have like green juices all the time. And then you realize that those people who are, you know, biologically older, actually younger than these mid 35 people who've sort of given up on life, and it sort of brings the other people down as well.
Right? So you're so right. Spot on with that. I mean, again, it comes back to mindset, right? And choices. Like I said in the beginning, the only two things we can change are breath and our thoughts, right? So it's up to all the thoughts.
And changing your thoughts is a little bit more harder compared to breath, right?
100%. I'm not saying it's easy, but
mind is always chattering.
Yeah, it's not easy, but the breath also helps. So it's beautiful because those two things can support each other. When you change the breath, you're more open to changing your thoughts because now you've got a handle on yourself, so to speak.
Yeah. Like, a lot of people have the fear of failure, right? That's very common. Fear of failure. But a lot of people also have, and I'm sure that you've come across this in working with, you know, celebrities, fear of success, because a lot of times you get used to a certain level of success, right? And that level of success becomes your version of mediocrity. Like, maybe you're a YouTuber, maybe you've worked with YouTubers, right? They've, you know, released a YouTube video that has 5 million views. That's awesome in by many cases. And then, you know, there's an opportunity to make 10 million views, but then they're like, what if I, you know, launch something, it hits success, and then I go back to like 100,000 views? How do you facilitate and help a person go through that weird thought process of fear of success?
Oh my goodness. I mean, fear in general, right? I always, what's the one, false evidence appearing real, right? Is one, but I also use this one. I use fear means to me, face everything and rise up. So F-E-A-R, face everything and rise up. And so even though we're going to be afraid of, and I've dabbled with fear of success, fear of failure, fear, all of it, right? And the only way to push through it is to face it, like, okay, the worst case scenario, I do a video and it sucks. I do a YouTube and it doesn't get the same. And so what's the worst case scenario? Okay, I know that video didn't land. Then I'll try something else. So I like to play out what that worst case is of the fear. So if it's fear of failure, if it's fear of success, I think that, you know, if you play it out, okay, so let's say I become successful. And what's the fear there? I'll play it all the way out. So then I'll have a lot of fame and then I'll have a lot of people writing me. And so then what would I do about that? Well, then I'll get some people to help me manage all the people that are coming at me. Then I'll hire, you know, so play it out fully and see, is it as bad as I'm making it out to be? And even if it is, can I still do it anyhow? Right? And because the only way out of it is through it. And the only way to tackle it is to take the first step. So, yeah, it's one of those things that you just have to face it and do it.
Other than, you know, breath work and meditation, what are some other tools that you have in your toolkit to help you change your state and raise your vibrations?
I think my two favorite ones, and not everybody might agree with this one, I really am a fan of cathartic energy release, also known as like big yells or quote unquote anger work, where you are in a safe and healthy way, releasing some of the feeling that might be keeping you stuck in the moment. So, you know, if your state is feeling blocked or frozen or paralyzed, which a lot of people went through during COVID, right, where they just felt frozen or anxious all the time, stressed all the time, because of the fear we didn't know what was coming or happening, that ends up being like a bowling ball of energy in your stomach. And when you feel that, you can't move. You are frozen, literally. And so the only way to unlock that sometimes is to let out, I believe, a big guttural yell or several yells or several, like, a scream. Sometimes it's, you know, and this was a style of anger work that I learned many years ago, where you take, I would take a tennis racket on a pillow on my bed and literally beat the heck out of that pillow with the racket while I'm saying the phrases of things that got me scared. I'm so scared of what's going to happen. Who knows what's happening on, you know, and I would literally beat the heck out of that pillow in a healthy way, so that it's out of my body. And usually underneath the anger, underneath the yell or the, what I call the cathartic energy release, is tears. Because underneath anger always is usually hurt or sadness. So if you're feeling stuck from, you know, whether it's anger or anxiety, there's usually just, it's usually something we're afraid of, like a fear or a worry or a sadness. And so once we let go of the first layer of emotion, which is the anger, when I do anger work to change my state, underneath that is always this soft, gentle cry of just like, oh my goodness, what I'm really feeling isn't anger. It's I'm just sad that that person didn't love me that way, or I'm just sad that that didn't work out. And then when you get to the tears, I usually then journal after that, because now that I've gotten that first layer of anger, the heavy, dark, toxic sludge out, then the tears come, then there's clarity, and then I journal. And so that's my favorite way to change my state. If it's a really heavy state, I use the anger work, guttural yells, tears, and then journaling.
Got it. I have a feeling that a lot of our listeners will have neighbor complaints now.
Only do it if you're in a place where you can get away with a yell. You can also put a pillow over your mouth and yell into a pillow if you do live in a... Honestly, I've had to do that in condos I've lived in where I couldn't do it.
But make sure, Action Tribe, that you're putting the pillow on your
Yes, not on someone else's. And also...
Not on your spouse's.
And also, please don't try this at home if you've got little ones. Don't beat the heck, because it can give wrong messages. So let's... Disclaimer on all of that.
Do you believe in psychedelics for yourself?
This is funny. We're going to open up a can of worms here. So I have never wanted to do psychedelics. I've never wanted to do ayahuasca or mushrooms or psilocybin, as they call it. And I've never felt like I needed. I know a lot of people feel like, and not need, but they feel like they want to get an answer, or they want clarity on something, or they're searching for something. And I've never... especially since discovering breathwork, felt that. Like, I'm not searching for anything. You know, I've found all the answers are in me. I already have all the answers. Yeah. I just need to get clear sometimes to hear them. But I'm not searching for anything. So I've never wanted to do it. And also, I never like to be out of control of my body for that many hours. So I know that on ayahuasca, it could be 9 hours. On you know, different trips have different time lengths, right? And I don't like that feeling. So I've never wanted to do it. That said, I'm part of a new company now that is starting to do some journeys, retreats, where we involve modality, different types of modalities in a ceremony style event. And one of them is using psilocybin, one of the modalities that we'll be using. We use breath work, hypnotherapy, mindset shifting, and psilocybin. So because I wanted to understand the full journey that people go on in this company that I'm a part of now, I decided to try it over New Year's. Right. And I took psilocybin. And honestly, it was, I'm not a fan of it. I was on it. I tripped for 48 hours. Now, that said, it was so uncomfortable in my body. I didn't fully lean into it. I probably resisted a little, even though I set an intention. I knew what I wanted to get out of it once I agreed to do it. But then I decided that for me, breath work is my psychedelic. Breath work is my answer when I need. And by the way, I can get off that ride of breath work in a second. Yeah. I change my breath pattern and I'm off it. Well, I was on the psilocybin. Yeah. I kept going, how long is this going to last? How can I get off of it? What do I have? I heard you could drink milk. I'm drinking milk. I heard you could, I'm just reading all the things, Googling, like, how do I get this to end? And it lasted literally for me 48 hours.
48 hours.
Longest, and nobody really has that long of a trip on psilocybin, typically. Right. But it was a,
how much did you take? How,
I don't even know the dosages. I don't, we did it with a with a ceremony shaman, and it was in a ceremony type presentation. But for me, after I was done, I was like, I didn't need to do that. I'm glad I did it to experience it, but I didn't need it for me. And I made the choice, really clear choice, that I probably won't ever experiment with it again. it's just not for me. And that said, though, I did get some clarity on some other things. I did get some downloads that were really cool, and it was great to experience. But I would have rather just had a really cool breathwork experience give me the same download. So,
I've heard of one company that's into this. I think they do mushrooms as well as breathwork and other modalities. And I think they're based out of Jamaica or maybe Bahamas. But I did it, you know, once a couple of years back. And for me, what I discovered was it's so important to have the right set and setting. In other words, to have the right frame of mind for me, as well as have the right person holding space for me. Somebody that I trust, has my right intentions and knows how to hold space, as opposed to a bunch of friends who are just, you know, here to have fun.
That's why I said we do it. We do it in a ceremony where it's, you know, there's certain, like, I guess it's okay to do it if you do it with the right ceremony, with the right intention, with someone who is leading it as a ceremony. And that's the way we do it and did it. But it makes all the difference. She was amazing, the woman who led it. I just, it just isn't for me, but that, but I still see, I see the benefits of it, because many of the people we did it in our journey with had amazing shifts and amazing life changes. So I believe in it for those who it's for, right? But for me, it's just not for me.
No, totally. What fascinates me about it, and I'm a student of that as well, is the ancient civilizations that all seem to have used some form of psychedelic, whether it's mushrooms or certain types of mushrooms or ayahuasca or soma as well. I'm right now reading the Eleusinian Mysteries of Greece. Have you heard of that? Well, the Eleusinian Mysteries were this secret ritual that was accessible to everybody, except that if you go through it, you have to keep it secret. You can't share it with the rest of rest of Greece. And they would go through these journeys of immersing themselves in the ocean and some meditation and sitting in a temple, and as well as some form of maybe LSD or mushroom. But all of them came out having a felt experience of death. And realizing that life is transcendent, it's beyond that. It's not, you don't stop there. And I feel that that played a role in how advanced the civilization was because of these experiences that people had and what it opened up for them. So that sort of, you know, sort of makes me curious and fascinated. But breathwork is amazing because you can just do a breathwork session for 1 hour, get up and then go about your day, right? You don't have to be there for hours and hours together.
So, but to your point, though, I do, for that reason, like, if it helps people to get out of, limiting beliefs, if it helps people to let go and understand that this particular life is a journey of, you know, that we're, it's not ending at the end. And so it helps people maybe not have fear of death. I mean, there's a lot of really beautiful reasons why I could see that it would be for someone, right? And so I like I said, I am a fan of it, just like I said, but it's just not a choice I need to do. But I do see the benefits for sure.
What is your understanding of the true nature of reality? I know before this interview, I said that towards the end, we go into some of the more spiritual slash esoteric slash, you know, parallel dimensions side of things. And our listeners find that the most interesting part of the interview. But what is your understanding of the true nature of reality?
Oh, well, I think reality is all of our perception, right? Like my reality is my perceptions, the way I'm viewing what's coming at me, the way I'm thinking about what's coming at me, the way I'm either still stuck in my past or still, fearing the future or thinking ahead. And I think everybody's reality is completely different and completely separate, because what I'm perceiving is so different from what you perceive. We could be looking at the exact same picture. And what it means to me, what I see when I look at it, what I feel when I look at it is completely different from your perception. Yeah. And so my reality is always going to be different than yours. And likewise, so I think our realities are made up of all of our life experiences, are made up of all of our beliefs, are made up of all of our interpretations, right? And so... yeah, that's how I would identify reality. It's a great question. No one's ever asked me that one.
I love it. And so like you rightly put, if we all have our subjective realities, will we ever come to grasp what the true nature of reality is? Or is there even a true nature of reality?
Yeah, that's a good one too. No, I mean, right? Because we're never going to be able to look at it through any other lens. I mean, look, you can see the saying, put yourself in someone else's shoes, right? You can momentarily feel what someone might have felt, but you can never fully feel or submerge yourself in someone else's feelings. So to say, you know, I can put myself in someone else's reality, or we can all have the same reality, is could never exist.
And the more I do breath work or maybe partake in, plant medicine experiences, I realize how complex and nuanced reality is and time is as well, right? Mm. Our sense of time can either expand or contract depending on how the experience was. Do you believe that there might be parallel dimensions? In other words, depending on what action you take, there are like two reality is created and you sort of surf down one reality. And then similarly, there might be a version of you who didn't take those steps or there's a version of you who did not go down into breath work and is still in fitness. Do you believe that something like this exists? I know it's like super high level, but what are your thoughts on
this? You know, no, it's another really beautiful question. I don't go down those rabbit holes of thinking, although maybe I should. Now you're posing a question to me that I have never pondered, honestly, for myself. Like I don't ponder that, but now that you've posed it, I'm going to give that, I'm going to give that more thought. But I honestly don't think just right off the cuff, like from where I know, I don't spend time thinking on that. So I would imagine that I probably don't think that exists. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm sure I probably would have already pondered it.
But
good question.
Action Tribe. If you have thought about these things, if you have thought about alternate realities, if you have thought about the true nature of reality, let us know. Let me know. Reach out to me. Send me an email, aj@my7chakras.com, because I'd love to engage with our listeners to see what you think about this. So Rebecca, thank you so much for sharing all of these things with us, your story, your journey, and some of the different decisions that you took that led you to where you are today. What does 2023 look like for you?
Oh my goodness.
In this year.
Yeah, I'm so excited for this year. 2022 was a tough year for me personally. Some things in my business didn't go the way I had planned. So I was so happy to say goodbye to it. And I'm so excited for this new year. I've got, you know, a lot of big plans. I always try to keep them sort of under wraps until they come to fruition. But I've got some really fun projects I'm working on and some things that I'm excited about that I know this year is going to be a huge year for me personally and professionally. So I'm couldn't be more excited for 2023.
That's awesome. So as we conclude, what is one thing that you're grateful for today, and how can somebody get to know more about you?
I'm grateful for the power of our minds, right? The ability to change our minds, to change our thoughts once we make the decision. Like I said in the beginning, I believe the things we can change, our thoughts and our breath, but it starts with just a decision, right? That I'm going to do it. And so I'm grateful for that ability, that in any moment I can change the way I feel, I can change what I think, I can change who I want to be. And so gratitude for that, right? For the possibilities and opportunities. And if anyone's interested in connecting with me, you can find me on Instagram. I'm under Rebecca Kordecki on Instagram. I'm super easy to find. You can Google my name and my website comes up, and some articles and videos and things that I've done in the past always pop up. So I'm really easy to find as long as you can spell my name. R-E-B-E-C-C-A. And then Kordecki, K-O-R-D-E-C-K-I.
Amazing. We'll have all these links up in the show notes. Action Tribe, if you enjoyed this episode and if you'd like to support us, then make sure you hit subscribe, hit follow, and ensure that you are following this podcast. Make sure you write us an iTunes rating and review or a Spotify review, whatever platform you're on, and make sure you tell your friends and family of this episode, because I'm sure that many of our listeners and non-listeners currently would love to get to know about breathwork and benefit and partake in this amazing experience that can potentially transform your life. And make sure you go to our website as well, my7chakras.com. We have, you know, articles from time to time, as well as podcasts that we post about that can change your life. So Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on our show, talking to us about the power of breath and taking us one step closer to a human revolution.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening to My Seven Chakras at my7chakras.com. That is my seven chakras.com.